With organizations like yours or others doing work on the ground. And you can just go to our website, coastrange.org, or email me, michael@coastrange.org, to learn more. But for now, Grace Warner, thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you so much for all the hard work you're doing down there.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's episode of Coast Range Radio. If you want to learn more or get involved in forest defense in the Northwest, you can find links and resources in the show notes of our podcast or on the Coast Range Radio tab at the top of our website, which is coastrange.org. Our website is a wealth of information on all things Coast Range and forest related, including our campaign to protect the Siuslaw National Forest from a potential Forest Service effort to undermine mature and old growth protections in that forest. Once again, that website is coastrange.org. My email is michael@coastrange.org. You can drop me a line anytime and let me know what you think of the show or if you have any questions. Thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio. We'll be back in a couple weeks.
Hey, what's up, everyone? It's Greg McVicar, creator of Undercurrents, and this is KBOO 90.7 Portland.
Cable Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Right now, during the last week of our spring membership drive, your support can go even further. Contribute today at bit.ly/KBOO. And your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $20,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Maximize the impact of your support for KBOO right now and help us reach our $60,000 goal by May 25th. Thanks so much.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO. In accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Board of Directors meeting will be held on Monday, May 20th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
I'm Grace Gary Medicine Eagle Reed. I am broadcasting Negotiating Dramatic Events, a new show on KBOO, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. I am a social justice activist since the 1960s. The purpose of the show is to make life more wonderful for me and the people around me. And I'm 80, and I'm going to take my elderliness and share what I have found so that everybody can be seen, heard, and understood. Negotiating Dramatic Events, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate KBOO.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I'm Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you so much for joining us. We would first just like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And before we begin our show, KBOO is in the middle of our annual spring membership drive, focusing on the postmodern, the avant-garde, and the alternative. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you. And your contribution will now be matched dollar for dollar up to $20,000. So please Help us reach our $60,000 goal by becoming a member today. Just go to bit.ly/KBOO or text KBOO to 44321. We here at Labor Radio thank you so much for your support. And now on to the topic that we're going to be discussing today. Workers at a pair of Mercedes-Benz plants near Tuscaloosa, Alabama, narrowly voted against joining the United Auto Workers, or the UAW, last week. Voting at the manufacturing facility in Vance, Alabama, and the battery plant in Woodstock, Alabama, kicked off last Monday and wrapped up this past Friday morning. The latest results from the NLRB tally had 2,045 votes in favor of joining the union, about 45%, and 2,642 votes opposed, about 56% of the workforce. So speaking to reporters Friday evening, UAW President Sean Fain said that it was, quote, obviously not the result we wanted, but we'll be back in Vance, end quote. And he actually continued saying, quote, these courageous workers reached out to us because they wanted justice. Justice isn't just about one vote or one campaign. It's about getting a voice and getting your fair share. Workers won serious gains in this campaign. It's a David versus Goliath fight. And sometimes Goliath wins a battle, but ultimately David will win the war, end quote. So yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, it's not the first time that a union has fought and unfortunately lost. But it is encouraging that it was such a narrow margin of victory, or you know, of defeat. And obviously, the union has vowed that it will continue to try and organize these plants. This unfortunate outcome makes the score so far one win and one loss in the UAW's $40 million push to bring 150,000 non-union workers, auto workers, into the union. Most of those workers that they're courting are located in southern states in the United States, and all of them are working for employers from Toyota to BMW, who located their plants in the South specifically to keep them union-free. The election followed a UAW win in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where 43,000 Volkswagen workers last month voted to join the union. So it shows that, like, this is possible. Their strategy is working. It just does take time. And this was actually, you know, the plant in Chattanooga was the first auto assembly plant that held an election, a union election, and won in the United States South since the 1940s. So that's progress right there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's important to note that the Chattanooga folks, it took them a couple of votes to get to the point where they actually won. You know, they had a few narrow losses before they got to the election that actually won the union for them.
Yeah, I think, you know, culture and participation of the workforce is a gigantic part of what makes or breaks kind of some of these union things, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Republican sentiment is more anti-union, obviously, than the liberal sentiment in some of the other states that we've been talking about on this show. So, I mean, it really is an uphill battle in certain areas of the United States where, you know, it kind of goes against some of the personal voting, personal beliefs, and different things like that. But I think we've shown time and time again as we talk about things on the show that, you know, organizations that unionize are going to get better healthcare. They're going to have better outcomes. They're going to have better salary, all of these things. And so, you know, like you said, it's just something that can take a little bit longer.
Yeah. And especially, you know, it's, you know, this country has a long history of unionization and fights for that. Now the South obviously has, you know, a longer history of, interests, you know, whether they're capital or political interests, fighting against such, you know, worker organizings and unions.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, there's a reason that the UAW has targeted the South as a place that they do want to focus on and to try and, you know, unionize these types of workers, this large number of workers. And that has a lot to do with the fact that historically it has been harder to do that in the South.
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll touch on it more, but, you know, when you're trying to organize at a plant, it's a lot easier if your governor and state representatives and local state politicians are also kind of backing you up and saying sort of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll touch on it in a minute, but, you know, when both the Capitol and the governmental organizations in your local area are kind of against you doing this, it can become a lot harder.
Yeah. Like, it's hard enough to do it when there's just neutral, yeah, like, so there's no support, but no direct
opposition. Yeah, it's hard enough, yeah, when Biden is coming, right, to your organizations and your all these sorts of things. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we even saw it with, you know, organizations like the Writers Guild or the Screen Actors, yeah, Guild, like organizations that everyone in the country is aware of and had a lot of high profile coverage and a lot of support from people that are very recognizable. Even that fight was, yeah, difficult for those unions. So, you know, it's obviously incredibly difficult for very anonymous workers in a very hostile anti-worker and anti-union, mm-hmm, environment like Alabama. Which, yeah, as you said, we will get into very shortly here, the kinds of things that were thrown at these workers. But as labor reporter Mike Elk noted, though the Alabama vote was a tough loss, it was not a blowout. And organizers now have a solid base that future campaigns can build on, like they did at the Volkswagen plant in Tennessee, where winning that election took three rounds of voting. So the workers at that Tennessee plant had been through two previous narrowly lost union campaigns, one in 2014 and then the next one in 2019. And their management had promised to, quote, do better, end quote. And workers had been let down each time. And that combined with the momentum of the UAW's record contracts in the fall of 2023, last year, gave them nearly three quarters of the VW workers, nearly three quarters of those VW workers the impetus to vote yes last month in their election there. And the UAW, under the leadership of Sean Fain, who we have discussed previously on this show, has really ramped up organizing efforts in the South following the rousing success of their stand-up strike from last year and the major victories that came from that against the big three automakers, who are Ford, GM, and Stellantis. And yeah, if you have listened to the show previously, we discussed the, you know, ongoing saga of that that process and how they, you know, instead of striking all of the facilities, they, mm-hmm, strategically chose certain spot, you know, certain facilities or certain plants to, you know, strike, you know, on their own schedule, so that the management, you know, was kept on their toes and had no ability to plan for, you know, striking workers.
They essentially used their knowledge, their vast knowledge of the process of how the company makes money to, you know, strategically and tactically target certain locations.
Yeah.
And then also it allowed them to expand the amount of time they could strike for, because they didn't go through all of their strike funds immediately, right? Yeah. They kept a lot of people working, and then they targeted specific, like, you know, sub-components that were, right, created in specific facilities and things like that.
Yeah, it's a very good word choice. It was very tactical, mm-hmm, and it's like it clearly worked, you know, and it didn't stretch them too thin, and they were able to hold out longer than the companies anticipated, and it was a major victory. And as a result of that, you're now seeing, you know, places that you would not have, like, objectively, you wouldn't expect workers in Alabama to necessarily be the first ones to come out after that and try and join the union. But look at this.
Yeah. I mean,
it's already working. So that's pretty exciting. And, you know, the work that the organizers have done has not gone unnoticed. The Alabama organizing effort has garnered support from progressives and union workers around the world. The UK-based Global Justice Now organization released a statement on this past Friday saying, quote, "We stand with Mercedes auto workers who are voting to join the UAW to better their lives and help end the so-called Alabama discount. It's time we end the U.S. South and Global South discounts that allow corporations to perpetuate a race to the bottom that hurts all workers," end quote. So clearly, like, this has not gone unnoticed, and really it has probably invigorated the movement to organize auto workers and, you know, workers in general throughout the South. So, mm-hmm, it's exciting that we're seeing this, and we know that they will be back to hold more elections, you know, in the very near future there. Now, you know, despite the loss, it's actually pretty surprising how narrow the margin was, considering the massive array of capital propaganda and political pressure that was deployed against the pro-union side. And really, like, showing just how scared they are of workers organizing to improve their jobs and to raise their wages, Republican leaders in southern states, including Governors Kay Ivey of Alabama, Brian Kemp of Georgia, Tate Reeves of Mississippi, Henry McMaster of South Carolina, Bill Lee of Tennessee, and, of course, Greg Abbott of Texas, issued a joint statement in April accusing the union of coming into their states to, quote, threaten our jobs and the values we live by, end quote, which is really reminiscent of the Reconstruction era and the claims of northern carpetbaggers coming down to disrupt, you know, things by trying to make fair and free elections down there. The letter also urged workers to reject the UAW lest they undermine the auto industry's growth. Now, of course, you know, what is the primary concern for any auto worker? It's the growth of the company that they work for, right? Not maybe their own, the growth of their own wages or anything like that. So that really does seem like it rings pretty hollow, that rhetoric. And it also, it is very clear that these governors are coming together not just out of concern for, you know, oh, we're worried about these outsiders coming in and organizing you. But it's very clear that there is some coordinated effort behind, you know, maybe where their fundraising comes from. And, you know, they know who is putting money into their campaign coffers in order to basically try and convince workers not to act in their own best interest. Now, we will be right back to this discussion in a moment. But just quickly, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Labor Radio here on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio. We'll be back to our discussion about the recent UAW vote in Alabama in just a moment, but I first want to drop a quick reminder that KBOO is in the last week of our spring membership drive, focusing on the postmodern, the avant-garde, and the alternative. We only have a few days left to reach our $60,000 goal, so please consider showing your support. Become a member today at bit.ly/KBOO. Thank you for supporting Community Power Radio, and now back to our discussion of the UAW vote in Alabama. So yeah, of course, you know, it's not surprising that all of these Southern politicians came out and, you know, against the union and very much in favor of allowing the companies to basically just set whatever low wage they want and keep that there.
I mean, we can talk around it. Status quo.
Yeah, exactly.
Status quo is their goal.
Very much. Not surprisingly, yeah. And, you know, just to add on top of that, as workers began voting last week, Governor Ivey of Alabama signed a piece of legislation on May 13th that would revoke economic incentives for companies that voluntarily recognize unions, saying that unions attack, quote, the Alabama model for economic success, end quote, which really does lead to a lot more questions than it does answers, I feel like. I mean, if you're claiming that a company that would realize that, okay, our workers are going to unionize, they are going to fight for this, and instead of fighting them and spending our money on a campaign against them, why not just immediately voluntarily recognize them and work with them to find something that works for both management and the workers to keep the company running and to keep everyone happy there? Yeah. Instead of doing that, it's basically, they are required to, they're basically required to fight tooth and nail and to spend all of their money and time fighting any type of worker increase and pay increase or cost of living increase or anything like that.
Yeah. And we've covered that significantly on the show. I think in particular the Starbucks, you know, which we've touched on many times, they ended up spending more money fighting the union than basically what they ended up giving up in in some of the concessions. So yeah, I mean, we've seen time and time again that, like, in terms of economic success, meeting the union at the table, getting compromises out of them, because almost no union even gets all of the things that they want anyways. No. It's not like, you know, that's how this goes. You basically come out the other side of it better.
Yeah. So like if the Alabama model for economic success is about basically spending all of the company's time and money fighting the citizens of Alabama to keep them, you know, from getting better pay, then not really sure whose success is being highlighted there.
Well, and we've talked about it a lot, right? I think these discussions can come down a lot to wages. But, you know, a lot of what the UAW is fighting for is, as car manufacturing becomes more complicated and also way more electric and less combustion based on, like, you know, an internal combustion engine, there are so many protections that I would have to imagine in the South are not getting followed for like battery, like working and creating batteries for cars. And that was just a gigantic part of what the UAW fights for. So again, it can't be hammered on enough that this stuff is about way more than just salary. Obviously that's included.
Yeah.
But like the safety of everybody, you know, a plant floor is such a complicated, dangerous place.
Right.
And so to be on the same page with your employer is just so important.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when it is physically life or death in certain situations.
Yeah. Yeah. And I may be jumping ahead because we're going to go into all the tactics. But, you know, one of the tactics that we saw a lot recently with like a lot of these auto manufacturing companies is actually they target the local management. Yeah. At the plants in order to scare people.
Yeah.
So, you know, they go and they fire managers at these plants, right, too. So it's like not only is all this going on, but now you're kind of throwing a plant into slight chaos by replacing all of its management to try to scare people, which again leads to safety concerns and things that are greater than just what it's being argued over. And I would even say, too, probably the efficacy or the efficiency of the plant in question.
Yeah.
Because if you're just ripping, replacing management, it can just be such a silly fight back and forth.
And then of course, as you're saying, like that, not only does that impact the productivity, you know, for lack of a better word, of that facility, but it scares both workers and, you know, low level managers as well, so that they're all turned against each other rather than working collectively to make sure that the company is producing the products efficiently and, you know, safely.
Yeah. At that point, it's not even about, you know, actually being a company that is creating goods or services or whatever. You're now just two sides of like a debate.
Right. And so, like again, if Governor Ivey is going to say that voluntarily recognizing unions and moving forward with that process and accepting the reality of it is against the Alabama model of success, and that really does seem like, I mean, on top of just being a flawed model of economic success, it really does seem to be more based in ideology and, you know, overall anti-worker, anti-union sentiment than it is in any type of real financial basis or any type of some financial success on the part of the companies. And so, you know, even though that seems shocking, wait till you hear this. Nathaniel Ledbetter, the Republican Speaker of the Alabama House of Representatives, who pushed that law through, basically saying that they wouldn't allow they would take away tax incentives if companies voluntarily recognize unions. He went so far as to call the UAW, quote, dangerous leeches in an anti-union op-ed that he penned very recently. Yeah. So, you know, we're getting into pretty insane language here.
Yeah. And this is a legislative, this show is not about legislation and it's not about like specific, you know, interpretation of specific policies. But I would have to imagine that a state level bill that is punishing and taking away incentives for voluntarily recognizing unions is something that the NLRB is going to look at or could even at some point reach the Supreme Court or something like that, because it seems to me like that sets a dangerous precedent. But again, definitely not law experts talking to you right now.
Certainly, yeah. Like, don't know the specifics, but I will say, as you're saying, like, that seems like that would immediately infringe on the right of workers to organize and to not have companies infringe on that. And it seems like that would go directly against the National Labor Relations Act.
Yeah, so something we'll keep an eye on for
absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, the anti-union campaign, along with being, you know, coordinated by but being pushed by the individual governors of these states, it was also being coordinated by, you know, statewide by the Alabama State's Chamber of Commerce, which is known in that state as the Business Council of Alabama, or the BCA. And just a little bit of info about who this shadowy organization is. The BCA's top leadership represents utilities companies, banks, healthcare giants, and its chairman is the CEO of the largest bank in Alabama, who made $38 million in the last 3 years. Three board members of Alabama Power, which is the state's largest energy company, have seats on the BCA board. BCA also includes the state's sole billionaire, who is a timber company owner named Jimmy Rain. And Governor Kay Ivey, who we were just discussing, is a member and staunch anti-union supporter of BCA's mission. And seven of the top 20 donors to her 2021-22 gubernatorial campaign are connected to the BCA. And the BCA Political Action Committee, which is called Progress PAC, gave Governor Ivey $380,000 since, has given her $380,000 since 2011. So this is just a quick snapshot of the vast web of corporate, state, and federal government officials that the UAW and auto workers are up against in their fight for unionization. And, you know, it just seems like it could not be more clearly divided, a clearly set divide between the fight between the 1% and the 99 here. Mm-hmm. You know, you have on one side, you have workers trying to fight for better wages and, you know, better safety regulations. And on the other side, you have bank executives and billionaires lining up to fund shadowy super PACs and propaganda campaigns against them. And as if that wasn't enough, much of the anti-union media coverage that popped up in Alabama in the lead up to the election was produced by a group called Yellowhammer News, which is no ordinary news site. It's actually co-owned by a longtime political consultant named Paul Shashi. I may be saying that wrong, but who cares? Who has deep ties to the Alabama political and business establishment. And he's, you know, basically he in 2023 became the BCA's chief political strategist. So, you know, none of this appears to have been disclosed in Yellowhammer's day-to-day coverage of topics, specifically topics like the auto worker union drive, despite the owner's glaring conflict of interest. And, you know, not to be outdone, Mercedes, as we were discussing before, threw a lot of, you know, anti-union efforts towards the workers there. They did have a few carrots as well, including in February, a month after the workers reached 30% on their union cards, the company announced it would hike the top pay by $2 and eliminate the wage tiers. So that everyone now could top out at $34 after 4 years. But you know, they brought the carrot and then they brought the stick, and Mercedes, you know, brought a number of sticks here, including they sent a barrage of anti-union text messages to the workers at the facilities. They held captive audience meetings to grill union supporters. They played anti-union videos at daily team meetings. They put an anti-union banner at the factory entrance, and they hired a union-busting firm, RWP, to coordinate all of these actions, a company that we have discussed many times in the show. And so all of that is to be expected in a union, an anti-union fight. But the hitch here is that Mercedes-Benz, being a German company specifically, it's actually, they technically broke German law. And so the German government is now investigating Mercedes-Benz for their union-busting conduct. It is technically illegal for German companies to infringe upon workers' rights to organize. And so the company, you know, even in the company's official principles, say that it will remain neutral during organizing campaigns. But of course, Mercedes carried out on its anti-union offensive even after the UAW filed charges against it last month for violating this German supply chain law, and after the U.S. government and the European Commission asked it to respect the workers' rights to organize. So, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel here. It does seem like maybe this specific company, may see some negative backlash in, you know, at their headquarters and at the top brass for their actions in Alabama. So obviously this story is not over, and the UAW has, as we mentioned before, has vowed to continue, you know, to hold future votes. And as we mentioned, in other plants in the South, like in Tennessee, it took three rounds of voting before they actually won the union victory. So we're sure to see more action at the plants here in Alabama, and we will obviously keep updated on that as things develop. But all of this really does point to the larger plan that Sean Fain and the UAW have laid out for organizing, you know, 150,000 workers in the American South. And on top of that, he's called for a general strike in 2028 when all of the UAW contracts will run out together. Mm-hmm. And so all of this, you know, the more people that can join the union, the more people that will be part of that, and the more power that a general strike will have.
Yeah, and just to kind of close that out too, you know, we talked a lot about the smart tactics that the UAW is using, but you know, aligning all of their contracts together, the more places they can get into, the more places that they can align to their same deadlines of contracts and things like that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, despite the loss, the future is looking pretty bright.
Absolutely. So we are out of time here on Labor Radio, but thank you so much for tuning in. I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Have a great evening.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand.